Today's episode of the Bronx Pinstripe Show is brought to you by SeatGeek. Download their app and enter promo code Bronx for $10 off your first purchase. We're also brought to you by Draft.com. Get a free entry into a real money baseball draft with promo code Bronx when you make your first deposit.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 320. Okay, so a weekend, Scott. That's more like it, right? Beat up on those crummy Orioles? That's what we expected when we started the season 6 out of 9 against the Baltimore minor league Orioles.
17-2, baby. 17-2.
Still doable.
The original prediction is back on track. Look, they treated the Orioles like they should have treated them the first time, like a minor league team, a team that is not worthy of stepping on the same field. That's what they are. So they took care of business. The ship has steadied. We're going full steam ahead now into Houston. I like it.
Yeah, what did I say last episode? Maybe it's a good thing. Just clear the mind. Get some team bonding on that shuttle down to Baltimore before they go to Houston. Road warriors, baby. You know, teams bond when they're on the road.
It's true. And, you know, you have a lot of new guys, too. And a lot of these guys have been with them in the minor leagues. So maybe there's that chemistry coming back from the, world champion Scranton Wilkes-Barre Rail Riders or the Trenton Thunder. You know, maybe we're getting a little bit of that little extra energy that these guys had as they were coming through the system. So I like having Tyler Wade there. Clint Frazier had a little bit of it after the trade. So we got some good mojo going.
I said, I can't remember where I said it because at this point we're doing so many different things with the podcast and the post-game videos. But you could tell the team was pressing, trying to just win a game, trying to get a hit with runners on base, and they couldn't scrape it across. They just needed somebody to do something big to sort of, and then that's just like the pin that lets the air out of the balloon that's ready to burst, right? And that's what Gleyber Torres did on Thursday with that home run, that go-ahead home run. It just allowed everyone to take a deep breath and say, okay, we're going to be fine. It's a long season. Doesn't mean, you know, some people say, oh, well, you guys, you know, overreacting. You shouldn't have been overreacting to all that stuff. And I still think there's a lot of areas this team can improve on. Doesn't make the games they lost to the Tigers and the Orioles early on any less frustrating. We had the caveat the whole time, though, it's early. But just because it's early doesn't mean you can't be frustrated. But they just needed that big moment. And, thankfully they got it.
Yeah, they did. I mean, Gleyber, this is when we saw Gleyber get super hot last year and start hitting all those 3-run home runs, and now he's back on the 3-run home run kick again, which I like. It's a good kick. He should stay on it. But you're also seeing
the next best thing is grand slams.
You're also seeing him go against the shift. You're seeing him spray the ball all over the place. You're seeing the Gleyber that I think we thought we were gonna, you know, eventually see of the top of the rotation type guy.
Top
of the lineup, who I thought would be,
maybe he can pitch too.
He might be able to pitch. To me, he's like he would be a perfect two guy. You know, he's a great spot anywhere up there. I mean, it doesn't really matter. Somewhere up top at some point, I think he will be there. But
right, because who knows now?
He puts bat to ball and he can spray it. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing him hit the home run, but we're also seeing him use his bat control and go against where the defense is not.
Right. The quote two guy is no longer the typical two guy anymore.
Right. Yeah, I know. It's not the same guy, but it is the same guy. He fits the profile.
He fits the profile of a top of the order hitter, a guy right. You want up to, you know, in the first inning because he's that kind of player.
Well, and I think what we're all looking for, right, is the evolution of Gleyber Torres. Where, you know, when we saw the first half of last year and he was phenomenal, then had that hip injury, and when he came back, it seemed like he was just kind of fighting that thing off or just not totally healthy. And he's admitted to that and talked about it in interviews in different times in the spring and, up at this point during the season, basically acknowledging that he wasn't fully healthy. And now I think we're seeing fully healthy Gleyber, a more mature Gleyber, the kid that just wants to hit Gleyber, having fun and doing, you know, hitting the levels we thought he could hit. So it's exciting to watch. It really is, because he's a fun kid.
Good weekend in Baltimore. Fun weekend. The boys had fun down there, right? BP crew in Baltimore on Saturday night. They were at Pickles Bar pregame. Bunch of Instagram stories going out. I was having a little FOMO, Scott.
I was definitely having some FOMO. It was it looked like a good time. The thing that did not look like a good time was a little disappointing. And if I'm being honest, is the shotgunning the twisted tees.
Yeah,
there must have been a promotion. Yeah, there must have been like. you know, two twisted tees for $2 or some, I hope that's the only reason they were actually doing it. So, but yeah, you know what? JJ's got a little work to do on that shotgunning.
A little slow, right? Well,
it was pretty piss poor.
It was a twisted tee, and those taste like ass. So,
but let me tell you something. When you're shotgunning a beer, you don't taste it. You just throw it down.
That's true. It just goes down.
You just get it down. You deal with the aftermath.
The twisted tees thing reminded me senior year in college. So we had this liquor store we always used to go to, and it was kind of a shady liquor store. And they would just have expired stuff in the back that they would sell to us for cash at an extremely steep discount. They had expired twisted tee light. So it's like 4% alcohol. It's basically water. It didn't taste like anything. You drank it. All you did was pee. You didn't get drunk because it was just water. We bought like the cases they were selling them to us, I think for $4 or $5 for a case of 24 of them. So we just supplied an entire party with twisted tea and we made jungle juice out of it. We just dumped vodka in a big cooler with a bunch of twisted teas.
The vodka will take care of the 4% alcohol.
Right. But it was also expired. So, you know, good old college days.
There you go. No, they look like they had a really good time, and they brought some good luck. So that's a good thing. You know, they went down there, they got the W. Yankee Stadium South rose up again, and it proved to be a good place. I mean, for Aaron Judge destroys that place. Every time he goes there, it seems like he's mashing balls. And first game of the series, boom, two shots right out of the stadium, perfectly on cue.
Second game of the series.
Whatever. It was when he was down there, perfectly on cue.
Perfectly on cue. Yeah, good luck. We've been good luck so far, knock on wood. Hopefully on April 13th, we're going to be good luck again. The first regular season BP crew event in the Bronx. So tickets have all been sold. Emails have been sent. But just update people on the entire process because I know there's a few questions that are coming through.
Yeah, so the game is obviously next Saturday and t-shirts have already been ordered and they're processing, if not already out the door. So you will be getting them this week. Usually they get in Wednesday or Thursday. Some will come in on Friday, but usually Wednesday and Thursday, just depending on the U.S. Postal Service and how they decide to deliver. But it is a priority mail, so they'll be coming in. And then as far as the tickets being transferred, we will transfer the tickets to you probably, you know, Tuesday or Wednesday at the latest. And then what happens is once we transfer them to you, you go into your email, you accept the ticket that is transferred, and the QR code, which is the thing that allows you to get into the stadium, will show up 48 hours before the game. So that's just a standard Ticketmaster thing. That's what happens. That's how they work the tickets. But that's how the process worked. And I'm going to send an email out probably tomorrow with explaining everything. So you guys will know all the details if you have not come to an event and don't know the deal yet.
Yes. And don't worry, you will get your ticket because I know some people are worried. They make a purchase and we get the tweet 20 minutes later. Hey, where's my ticket?
Yeah. You will get your ticket. You will get your t-shirt. All good. Don't worry. We'll all work it out. And then, so that's this coming weekend, obviously the first one. And then everybody needs to set their calendars, get these tickets ordered. Cause we already have over 100 sold for the Red Sox game, which is May 31st. It's a Friday night, the Friday night game of the Red Sox series when they're coming in. So that's going to be a blast. Again, that's a Friday night game. And the tickets are on the fan shop, shop.bronxpinstripes.com. If you go to bronxpinstripes.com, just click on the fan shop link and it'll take you there. But yeah, get them. I mean, set your crew up together, get your people and get these tickets because they're going to go. And last year, I think we sold 350 tickets in that section. So I'm looking probably about the same.
We did last year. You're right. Yeah. We had about 350 in that section. We sold out all the tickets we had. And if you were trying to get tickets to the game we went to against the Red Sox last year, and you were looking on the secondary market, they were over $120 for much worse seats than we were sitting in.
Oh yeah.
So do not hesitate on this deal. It is a good deal. This game will be packed.
Oh, it's definitely going to be sold out. It's definitely going to be packed. They're going to be at capacity. And if you're trying to go without these tickets, without our tickets that are already locked in, the prices are locked, you're not going to go on the secondary market, get all those fees and all that. Plus, you're getting a t-shirt. You're hanging out with a whole bunch of fun people. And it's just more fun to go watch a game anyway this way. So, yeah, definitely jump on it before they go.
All right. Takeaways from the Baltimore series. So this was the first series, even though I still think there were some parts of the parts of these games that you can still nitpick and you can still say, I wish Gary Sanchez didn't get picked off second base there. I wish Greg Bird didn't bobble that ball. Like there's still things that this team needs to improve on, but they demolished the inferior Orioles. And that's why it was, like we said, so frustrating that they could not do that last weekend at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know what it is. It's just a matter of like taking them by surprise or being a little shell-shocked by the injuries. Who knows? You know, maybe, like you said, they were pressing at home. There's a number of things, but there was sloppiness. The fact that they came back is a very positive thing, obviously. And, you know, they got to clean up some of the small stuff. There's definitely small stuff. But again, you know, the whole excuse early in the season, like I expect to see some sloppy play early in the season with every team. It's just the way it works. You know, once you get those reps in and you're getting back into your grind and back into your, you know, your schedule and the things that you normally do on a game day and you're well into it, like that's when you start seeing much better baseball being played in general.
But isn't that, in theory, what spring training is for? To work out all those kinks, get the rust off?
It is to get the rust off, but you can't simulate real play, even with spring training.
Like, that's literally what they're doing with spring training games. That is simulating real play.
But you can't. You know it's not real. You can try and get as much as you can in, but when you step in and everything counts, it's just different. It's not the same feeling. It's a different atmosphere. You're in the big stadiums. You're not in Florida. It's not spring training. It's for real. It's just different. There's no other. You can't reproduce that. You can try as hard as you can and get as close as you can, but it's not the same.
I don't think that's an excuse for sloppy play early in the season or late in the season.
I don't
middle
think there's
the
a season. I don't think there's an excuse for it. I just think it comes natural when you have an entire off season. You're getting back into your groove. The first week or two of you playing, where you play every single day, you're not going to be as sharp as you would be in August when you've already played, you know, months of baseball and you're already in your groove. Like it's just different.
I don't know. August. Those are the dog days. Sometimes you get sloppy play in August too. Really, what we found is like late May and June is when really you're hitting your stride.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're more fresh. You don't have all those everything underneath you as far as your, you know, bad tired legs, but you're also into the season enough where you're ready to go. Either way, look, it doesn't matter. The fact that they played sloppy, that's it. If we're chalking it up to early, you know, early season jitters, early season just sloppiness, whatever. Bottom line, clean it up. Move on, win some games.
Right, because I wouldn't say they played a crisp series, yet they just pummeled the Orioles. So
yeah, that's the reason when you're looking at like what they should be doing against this team is they don't need to play perfectly well against the Orioles. They just need to stand up in the batter's box and swing the bat.
You're going to get a position player out there throwing you meatballs.
Yeah, and even some of their actual pitchers that are supposed to play the position are just not good.
Well, that's why the Yankees hit 14 home runs in the series. At one point, they scored 18 straight runs via the home run, which, while it was fun, it's also a little annoying. You're like, oh, God, I really wish they'd just get a single here instead of a three-run home run, just so I can say there was an RBI single with runners in scoring position.
Well, yeah, and they did finally.
They did
today.
Finally, but yeah,
they finally got some.
It's almost like, oh, great, another home run. Like, can't this team score in another way?
Well, this is kind of what we were talking about. I had a couple people tweet me like, oh, this isn't fun. Like, yeah, of course it's fun. It's fun when they score runs. There's no doubt. But the problem with this whole style of baseball is that we're going to have, you know, a stretch of games where they're not going to hit a damn thing.
You're about to go up against Justin Verlander.
And
you're not going to pummel seven home runs.
That's the thing. It's the other side of where the home runs. What's the other side of it? It's not... Usually in today's game, it's not you know, stringing together base hits; it's strikeouts. So the problem is you have high highs and low lows, and that's, you know, if you can find that middle ground, and you know, again, I think we saw some of it because even some of the home runs, like there were a lot of runners on base too, and some of these guys were getting on base by hitting singles and hitting doubles, and so I actually think they did spray the ball pretty well across the diamond this weekend, and I was, you know, LeMahieu does it every time he's up. Torres has been doing it. Freaking Clint Frazier was like a man-child today. It was fun to watch. So the fact that the ball's also leaving the park, that's just icing on the cake.
Right, and it's also, I think, a part, partially due to the fact that you're in Camden Yards, it's a home run hitter's ballpark, and you're facing poor talent, really. You're facing a team with not a lot of talent. And right. That's going to happen when you have Gary Sanchez and Gleyber Torres and you know, all these guys up there that are capable of crushing the ball. But so far in the season, by my tally, they've scored 69% of their runs, 34 of 49 runs via the home run. Last year, as we know, they led baseball with 50.8% coming via the home run.
Yeah, that's a lot. So it's the whole eggs in one basket, you know, scenario. If you're living and dying by the home run ball, you're going to see bad days and they're going to be frustrating because they're going to probably be ugly, like 18 strikeouts.
Does it concern you at all that like, does this concern you at all? Scoring via the home run. Like, this is the team that Brian Cashman has built. This is what we've talked about for the last 2+ years. Does that concern you going forward?
Well, I mean, I honestly thought when we're looking at what the roster, the makeup this year and the lineup makeup this year, I see a different makeup than I did last year. I see Andujar, who's not obviously not here any longer, but when we're going into the season I'm talking about, was a guy we expect to make a lot of contact. I expected Gleyber to just take that next step and make more contact. Like, I think last year in the second half, he was striking out more than he normally would. LeMahieu is a different element to this lineup. You add him, you're adding guys now who are setting tables. I expected the home run ball from the other guys, and even Judge. I mean, Judge is a home run hitter. Absolutely no one would question that. But he has the ability to get the base hit the other way, to put the ball in different places. He's got really good bat-to-ball skills as well. But so, no, I expected them to be a more well-rounded lineup. And, you know, if we can get a guy like Clint Frazier up and playing, like, I expect Clint Frazier to be more of a guy that's not going to strike out a ton and make a lot more contact and really balance out that lineup a little bit. And he's going to add power. But I think we're going to start seeing more of some like significant gap power with him. Like, I feel like he's going to be a doubles machine as well when he really gets going. So I think there's more balance this year. It's obviously not showing in the numbers with, what'd you say, 69%?
Yeah.
But to me, like, a lot of those home runs, there were a lot of runners on base this weekend. And
oh, God, like, them, every home run today was a 2-run homer.
But a lot of them were base knocks too. Like, the guys were getting on base by hitting themselves on base.
Yeah. I mean, you can't, you know, at a certain point you say, who cares how they score runs as long as they're scoring runs. But it's just something that's not going away either. So this is going to be an ongoing thing all season. It's going to be some boom or bust.
That's just the way baseball is today. And honestly, right. Some
teams more than others, and the Yankees are more than others.
But you look at one of the big reasons the Red Sox won last year was they were able to get big hits in big situations. And the 2 years ago, the Red Sox had one of their lowest seasons, if not their lowest season in the last, 10, 15 years with home runs leaving the park. And they added some more power with J.D. Martinez, but they also put the ball all over the place. I mean, you see Mookie Betts still hitting the ball out of the park, but you see a lot of these guys making a lot of contact, getting base hits, getting doubles. And in the playoffs, when you're going against the best of the best as far as pitching, you're going to have to scratch across some runs. You're not going to always hit the ball out of the park. You need to get on base and you know, hit the ball in places where the defense is. Because if they can go on and just shift on you and expect, and you're trying to, you know, use your launch angle and get the ball out of the park against guys like Verlander, you know, good luck. Because it's probably not going to happen very often.
Yeah, and we're getting that test on Monday night, so it's going to be a tough series. That's why I said it's like, you know, you had the 9 warm-up games. Now it's time to go up against real competition.
Yeah, and they're hitting their stride, which is good. I mean, at least confidence-wise, they're in a good place.
Confidence-wise, they're in a good place. Glaber's in a good place. He had a monster series. He was 7-for-10. He scored 6 runs, had the giant 3-run home run on Thursday. When that win on Thursday, you know, it looked like they were going to lose that game, and you're like, oh, God. You know, this team is really spiraling. So that was a huge win on Thursday.
Yeah, because they just needed to cut it out. They just couldn't go walk into Baltimore and lose another game. I felt like they realized, you know, it's the whole back against the wall, the Judge mentality, the fact that he came out and said that early. You can just tell that he's got I feel like he's got a different edge this year. He's got a little bit of a chip, almost like a frustration, where, you know, some games didn't go their way last year because they took things for granted. And I see a different Aaron Judge this year. I see a different guy that's going out there. And we talked about this as far as the leadership. You know, I do see him as stepping up even more as leader. I mean, making public statements like that, like back against the wall type thing, that we can't take anything for granted. Like, that's the type of stuff that you want from your star player, from your best player. So I love it.
Yeah, and with Judge, so he hit the 2 home runs this on Saturday and with the leg kick, and that got a lot of notoriety. Because there was a lot of talk in spring training about Judge taking a new 2-strike approach. He's not doing a leg kick on 2 strikes, which I think is really just to simplify things, right? Simplify things, get bat on ball. I can still hit the ball out of the ballpark by just getting bat on ball. But then there was this quote after the game. So he did hit the 2 home runs with the leg kick, and he said, I've been feeling good with the leg kick, so I wanted to keep that rolling. Having the no stride is just something I want to go to when the leg kick ain't feeling too good. When the leg kick's feeling good, let's roll with it. That quote tells me Judge is such a preparer, and he's such a guy that needs the peace of mind of saying, I have plans A, B, C, and D before I go to the plate.
Yeah, I mean, I love that. I absolutely love the fact that he has fallback options. And for him, he needs to have those fallback options because he's such a pro that if he doesn't feel right with something, if his timing feels off with his leg kick, well, he's also confident with his stride and the ability to cut down his swing and go the other way. And the fact that, you know, he has the confidence to take a different approach and still be able to go out there and perform at a high level, as far as, like, you know, his belief that he can go out there and still perform at a high level, I like it. And he knows his body, he knows his swing, he knows the tempo, he knows the timing. So if the leg kick's working, he understands that, you know, that's probably most optimal power. So if it's working and the timing's there and you feel good and you're seeing the ball well, you know, keep it up. And that's what you said. On the second home run, there it was a 2-2 pitch, I believe. So that was a 2-pitch approach, but did not, you know, just have the stride. He actually still used the leg kick and demolished the ball. I mean, it was a 79 mile an hour hanger over the middle of the plate to Aaron Judge. Like, he probably saw that and just was like, you know, going ballistic inside his head, and he couldn't help the leg kick. The leg just went up. He's like, I'm going to demolish this ball.
Yeah. He was like a puppy dog who couldn't control his excitement. Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. And he crushed the ball. So, you know, it was, but yeah, like having that confidence, having that approach, it's a very telling sign and just, you know, kind of the way that he goes about the game and how important he knows that all of these at-bats are and how he is just prepared for every scenario. And it's amazing to see.
Well, he's the type of guy who's still trying to get better, which I love, and you give a lot of credit to. But I think there's also some people out there who might have the opinion that, hey, why are you going to mess with something that has clearly worked for you the last two seasons?
Because he still wants to get better on the strikeouts. He still wants to cut those strikeouts down. And when you're at a two-strike approach, and like you said, he just has to make contact, because a lot of them, especially Yankee Stadium, are flying over that short porch. So if he could take out that stride, feel confident with a shortened swing, more of a stride rather than a leg kick, and just make contact, go the other way, or just go wherever the ball is. If it's if it's an inside pitch to pull it, if it's something out over the plate where he can, you know, go the other way and just wait, and then slap it to right field, he's good with that. And the fact that he's, like, a lot of power hitters would not take that approach. They would swing or die, and
because
that's it.
They don't want to sacrifice the potential home run. Like, a lot of guys in today's game, a two-strike approach, one-strike approach, no-strike approach, it's all the same.
Yeah, but also a lot of guys don't want to mess with their swings or mess with their mechanics because they have a good thing going, so they don't want to take a different approach because they believe that, you know, if they do that, possibly it'll mess with their power stroke, and then what, you know? And that's their livelihood. So I'm going to strike out and I'm going to hit home runs. I mean, look at Chris Carter, man. Look at
I just like him picturing John and Susan talking about, you know, there's no two-strike approaches anymore. Whatever happened to choking up on the bat, John?
Yeah, and then Aaron Judge comes around, the almighty golden child. That's just a beautiful, 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 perfect baseball player in their eyes. So,
but you know how, like, Joey Votto with two strikes chokes up on the bat? And Joey Votto is one of the best hitters, all-around hitters in baseball still. Like, he's always leading in on base percentage and he hits a decent amount of home runs. But, like, that's such a rarity, is choking up. Like, that does not happen anymore. And yeah. I almost feel like Brian Cashman and his nerds would have a conniption fit if they saw somebody choking up on the bat.
I don't know, man. Brian Cashman was a hell of a leadoff hitter who I started the Evil Empire.
Oh, you started it. Okay.
Yeah. And
the Evil Empire. That's not the name of the book.
What the hell is the name of the book?
Inside the Empire.
Inside the Empire. Same damn thing. But I mean, like, that guy was a hustler, man. You don't think Brian Cashman choked up? I guarantee he did.
No, he didn't ever got to two strikes. Don't you remember? He swung at everything.
He swung at the first pitch.
He was the Mariano Duncan of hitters.
I think that's one of those lost arts, but it's one of those, it's like the 90s, man. The 90s are back today. The fashion's back. The choking up on the bat, it'll be back. They'll realize that, oh, hey, you have more control over the bat and they're shifting on me, so I'm going to hit the right field. And it's a lot easier when I choke up.
Yeah.
That'll be a new analytic at some point. It'll be new. Some sabermetric nerd will go back and it'll be a full turn and we'll go back and play real baseball again.
Eventually, there's just going to be sack bunts and everything all the way. But maybe they'll remove
and guess
fences.
What? They'll find numbers.
Maybe in 100 years, the fences won't exist anymore.
They'll find numbers to support it.
Right. I want to ask one more thing about Glaber. It's a thought I had. So do you think there's any coincidence that when he, you know, Tulo goes down, Glaber needs to go to shortstop full time, starts to get a little bit more confidence at the plate?
Do I think it's going to be a problem?
No, do you think it's a coincidence?
No.
Or do you think there's a comfort level? He has a comfort level because we've heard Gleyber feels more comfortable at shortstop. He might not be better at shortstop, but it's more natural. So if he doesn't need to think so much in the field, he can just worry about hitting, right? And he can be more fluid in the field. Let me just concentrate on hitting. Whereas at second base, I think he's can be a really, really good defensive second baseman, but it's not as natural to him as the shortstop position.
I mean, you're putting way too much emphasis on them thinking.
I'm posing the question.
I don't think he's out there thinking. I don't think he's out there thinking about playing second base. I think he's
nothing's going through those ears with Gleyber. Just emptiness, you're saying.
No, I'm saying he goes out there and he practices hard enough and instinctually he knows what to do at this point. Uh-huh. When you're a shortstop, you can move over to second base. Like, yeah, it's not his natural position. It's a different way. It's a different throw. Going, you know, turning the double play is different. You can. There's just a lot of different things. Like a lot of times you can be going away from the play when you're going up the middle, whereas at the short, you're going towards first base or towards, you know, right field. So there's different things that you have to get used to, but I don't think he's really thinking out there. He just reacts to, you know, what he knows. So I think it's just a coincidence. I think that he's just, you know, getting into the groove.
I think it's a coincidence as well, but it did cross my mind this weekend.
I tell you what, you know who's playing some phenomenal field, doesn't matter where the hell he's playing, is Tyler Wade. That kid is showing like ridiculous glove. He's made some amazing plays. Playing at second, coming across, playing short. The guy's a phenomenal defender.
He's an athlete.
Yeah. He's playing the role that he was meant to play on this team, the one that I've been pining for however long now.
Mm-hmm.
1 year.
one year, ever since Ronald Torres, RIP.
Ever since they didn't sign Hechavarria. I'm like, oh, why would they do that? They have Tyler Wade. It's the same thing with upside.
Yeah. So we talked about Gary Sanchez briefly. I mean, so I saw something on Twitter. He had two singles to start the season, home runs ever since. His only hits, home runs.
Yeah, that's what he does. He hits dingers. He hits dingers. He doesn't
like to. He tried so hard to get the fourth home run today off, who was pitching, Alberto for the Orioles. And he threw him like, you know, a 78 mile an hour meatball in the middle of the plate. And Gary was just out in front. But my God, did he swing out of his shoes.
Dude, it's very clear that Gary Sanchez does not want to run the bases. So he wants to hit the home run so that he can just trot around and go back to the dugout and put on his gear.
Well, I was thinking like, Gary, don't twist an oblique the wrong way trying to hit the ball a million miles, but whatever.
No, he's twisting obliques by trying to get back to third base and, you know, tripping on the bag and being called out or being picked off at second base. That's where he's
twisting second obliques. The second base one, both are horrible. Both are plays that cannot happen, especially for a team that already struggles enough to get hits with runners in scoring position. You can't be squandering opportunities, bases loaded, nobody out, and first and second, nobody out, which were the two situations. But I think about that game on Thursday. This team is fighting for every run. At that point, they were coming off a bad homestand, going on the road. And what the hell is Gary Sanchez doing wandering off second base?
Yeah, I don't know. He was in no man's land, and it was just a really bad look. Just a really bad look. The third base one was bad too because like people were saying that, yeah, he tripped over. Okay, yeah, he tripped. But guess what? He didn't know where he was either at the same time. Like he came into the bag really hot and tripped over it because his momentum carried him further because he was trying to get back because he was thrown off. He was flustered. He was not expecting it. He wasn't anticipating anything. It was just a bad overall baseball awareness play. So I don't care if you trip on the bag. Know where you are so that your feet can be in the right position. And he obviously didn't and thus tripped over the bag and fell and got tagged out. So there's no excuse for it. You know, even if you trip over a bag because you just weren't in the right position in the first place.
Those are two plays that if they lose either one of those games, you look at and you say, Gary, you could have cost us the game.
Oh my, he would have gotten murdered. If that cost the game, that pickoff, especially that pickoff at second. Yeah, he's getting destroyed. But now,
rightfully so. Like he should be criticized for that. Like, yeah. What does Aaron Boone say?
He said something. He talked about after Saturday's game. He did talk about the base running plays and how they need. That was apparently the first. I didn't hear this. I heard it from. I was listening to John and Susan, the best in the business today, and they were talking about that Boone acknowledged it first and foremost in the press conference after the game on Saturday.
Yeah, he acknowledged then talked about it. But what I'm saying is, what does he say to Gary Sanchez, man to man?
You can't do that shit.
You think he's taking a hardline approach with him?
No, because I think he says it in his own way. I think they have a relationship where he can say it in his own way. again, this is all speculation behind the scenes. I don't like speculating what happens behind the scenes because it's all like totally guessing. Nobody has any freaking idea what the conversations are like. But if I imagine what they'd be like, I would imagine that he's built up this. The reason why he has good relationships with people is because he can now communicate with them because he's established rapport. Once you establish that rapport, you could go in and have a conversation about a serious thing and not be a dick. You don't have to be yelling at the guy and kicking dirt in his face to make a point. You can get in there. We talked about dads last time, right? You could be the stern dad that shows disappointment when you do something that your manager doesn't like. And I think at a certain point when you have a relationship with a manager and he comes up and says, "Look, man, like we got to be better than that." You know, then there possibly is a little bit of a disappointment factor. I don't want to disappoint my manager. And that's how a point can also be established. There's not just one way.
I imagine behind the scenes Boone calls Sanchez Gare. "Hey, Gare, we can't be doing that, Gare."
I could see that.
Yeah. Frazier, we talked about Clint. So just massive moment on Saturday for him. He talked about how in his first couple at-bats after he got called up last week, he was trying to win the game with every swing, which is, you know, it's a cliche, but at the same time, it's a terrible approach.
It's also exactly what I would expect from Clint Frazier coming up.
Right. He, like, as he's swinging, he's like, "This is going to look damn good on Instagram."
Yeah, exactly. Which he posted his picture of.
Of course he did. Shot, whatever, but you know afterwards. What? I don't care. I don't care. Fine.
But he was thinking about it every time he struck out, too.
But he said, "I just tried to simplify things, get my pitch." He said, "I was looking for a pitch to drive. I got it, and it paid off." And then Sunday, he backs it up 4 more hits, 2 more home runs, and a 2-out RBI single. A lot of people saying this is the moment for Clint Frazier where he just needs a jumping off point, because he seems like a very snowball down the hill kind of guy that once he gets momentum, he gets the confidence, and then there's no stopping him.
Yeah, no, I think confidence is extremely important for him. I think that he's got to feel good about what he's doing in that moment. If he does feel that, then all the rest of it kind of clicks.
Talent takes over at that point.
Yes, and if there's semblance of doubt, if there's like a little bit of uncertainty, that's when we start seeing him struggle. We start seeing him pressing, you know, out in front of the plate, like attacking balls rather than waiting on them and just using the bat speed. That's what I think we're seeing. We're seeing the ball come to him. He's not going out and trying to, you know, reach for things and leaning out over the ball. We're seeing him wait, use that phenomenal bat speed and let that ball carry deep so that he can mash it. And, that's when he's at his best, I think. But yeah, I think the confidence is a big deal for him.
Right. And you know,
he's the guy that Judge always has to pump up.
You think so?
I think so. I think he's a pump up guy. I think that whether it's Judge or whomever, like someone's got to keep him up. You know what I mean? Like someone's got to be like, "Yo," even if he struck out, like, "Yo, good. That was a hell of a cut. You just missed that." Like they got to keep him up.
They were talking about today that it shows confidence in him today. They started him against a right-handed pitcher. Not that he was that great of a right-handed pitcher for the Orioles today, instead of Talkman, who's the lefty. And they basically went all right-handed lineup except Brett Gardner today against a right-handed pitcher. But at this point, I don't even care. I mean, there's so many injuries. They're so down the depth chart. Put the best players on the field, please. Whether it's lefty, righty, switch hitter, just put the best damn players on the field.
And this was going to be a problem when we were all healthy anyway. So I mean, we were going to be right-handed predominant the entire season if we were perfectly healthy. So it's nothing new. The roster, that's just the way it's kind of mapped out. And they better be able to hit right-handed pitching as a right-handed bat, because that's primarily what we're going to see.
Right. Maybe there's a BP crew wants to go to a game in Houston this weekend, or you're trying to go to a game coming up at Yankee Stadium. Well, if you've ever tried to look for tickets, you know it can be frustrating. That's why I want to tell you about SeatGeek. For a long time, buying tickets has been really difficult and annoying with a few big companies who don't really care about the customer. Well, SeatGeek is a ticket company where the customer comes first. With more than 50,000 five-star reviews in the App Store, SeatGeek is focused on making your experience as easy as possible. And damn, I wish we had 50,000 five-star reviews. I don't know about you, Scott. SeatGeek pulls in millions of tickets from all over the web, rates each deal on a scale of 1 to 10, and displays them in an interactive seat map, so it's simple to find what you're looking for. Green dots are good deals. Red dots are overpriced deals. And I don't know about you. That is my favorite part about the SeatGeek app. Like there are other apps out there, other ticket companies. The apps don't even compare to SeatGeek. It's so much cleaner to just look at colors, right? Just green. I'm going to click on the green dot.
We're simple folk.
We're simpletons.
We like simple things. Yeah, no, I actually do have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way to shop for tickets that I've found. In fact, I just used it to buy some spring seat tickets for my sister. I've used it for my Jets tickets, and I will use it to buy some Yankees tickets at some point this season. So best of all, listeners can get $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase. And lastly, SeatGeek supports our show, so go support them because they support us. Use promo code Bronx for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. You can use that for concert tickets, sports, comedy, whatever you want. Remember, promo code Bronx for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
James Paxton on Thursday impressed me. And you might be saying he pitched 5 innings and gave up 8 hits and 4 runs. How the hell could he have impressed you? But after that first inning where his velocity was down, he looked like it was going to be a disastrous outing. He was all over the place. He gives up the leadoff home run. Then he loads the bases. He balks. Like, that's at that point, you're saying the only thing missing in this 2019 season is a friggin' bases-loaded balk. And then he's got a wild pitch, and you're like, what the hell is going on? But he nutted up. He nutted up and got them into the sixth inning.
This is something that the guy that pitched in a similar spot last year would never have done. We would have seen the other guy. I will not talk about his name. He would have cowered. He would have been pulled in the second inning, and he would have talked about how great his pitches were. And he would have blamed somebody else.
Right. My stuff was good out there.
What we saw here today on Thursday was James Paxton not having his good stuff, not having his A stuff. He ran into trouble. Like you said, wheels almost came off. They were trying to come off. One nut was holding them on. They were wobbly. So what he did is he came back out and he pitched, you know, deeper into the game than probably anybody expected. Got into the sixth inning. And was then pulled probably because of pitch count. But he, you know, brought everything back down and got through the rest of the game. I think he let up one more.
Yeah, he gave up run. four total runs, but.
But he got back into it, 9 strikeouts.
The 5 and the 3rd innings is the impressive part after that start.
Right, because he took command and realized that he's got a tremendous offense when they're hitting the ball and that they can make up for this. And I just got to give them some depth and keep them in the game. And that's what he did. So when you start seeing a guy that's down and out, not having his good stuff, but can stay in the game and give you a today's standard quality start-ish, then that's good stuff, man. It just kind of proves to me that I feel like we were all on the right path with the way that he's built. Like, he's just built differently. You saw visible frustration, him coming off. I like that. I like that he's mad. I like that he's frustrated. And he went out there and did better. And he gamed up. So I'm impressed.
So starts like this, David Cone has talked about being his favorite kind of starts. I don't know if you've ever heard him tell this.
Yes, I have.
Where he says, there's times you go out there and you have your A game, and it doesn't matter who you're facing, you're going to dominate. There's times you go out there and you have absolutely nothing. You are throwing slop up there. High school kids could hit you. And then the rest of the time, you need to figure it out on the fly. And he said those were the most fun starts for him. And I feel like this was a figuring it out on the fly start for James Paxton.
Yeah, and only his second start as a New York Yankee too, which is, you know, you don't expect that early on. I mean, adversity happens when you're in the second time you're in the uniform when it really counts. Like, that's got to be nerve-wracking. And what he did is he showed that he's, you know, he's able to handle that moment and go out there and right the ship.
Yeah. It was very impressive. I honestly think that was, you know, I know you and I are on the same page with this. We love to see that kind of thing.
I feel like this is a Canadian trait. I don't know. I've met a bunch of Canadians. I don't really know many of them well. I went to school with one, a girl that was from Canada. And I feel like if something goes wrong, they just kind of like grin and bear it and just go on with their day and still do what they have to do. I just feel like that's just how I see that culture. It's a hardworking culture, the Canadians, and they will grind. Even if it's not a good day, they'll still grind. Not feeling well, still going to go to work.
Still
going to take care of my responsibilities.
That's not a stereotype you get usually from the Canadians. Usually you get they're just too nice. They're always polite about everything.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that too, but I see them as hard workers. Maybe it's the hockey. Maybe it's because I feel like there's a lot of...
You know, hockey's just... You have to be a grinder. If you're not a grinder, right, you're not a hockey player.
Well, it's the national sport. So, I mean, like, you know, they're learning how to play, how to be a hockey player.
It is not actually a national sport of Canada.
Whatever. It is, to me, it's their national sport. To everybody else, I'm sorry, Canada, if that's not your national sport, we think it is.
It's lacrosse. Did you know that? National sport of Canada, lacrosse.
That's ridiculous. That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
At least go with curling. Like, if you're going to do something stupid, do curling.
I don't even know. I'm going to have to fact check that. That doesn't make any sense.
Google it right now.
No, just go. Move forward.
All right. Let's talk about Domingo Germán. I was listening to the first inning of Sterling today, and he was calling him Mingo. Is that a new thing with Sterling?
That's all right. You know, a little nickname. He's being... he didn't add a Y at the end of it, so I'm okay with it.
Mingy?
No. I like Mingo.
Mingo, yeah, not bad. Domingo
Germán. The Yankees tried to do some play on words with Domingo. They said dumb Mingo, like they were trying to say dominates in a tweet. It was bad.
Yeah.
I don't know. They were
back to the
something.
Drawing board on that tweet, I guess. Yeah. Maybe Mingo is going to be on his player's uniform.
I mean, if Sterling called me Mingo, I would be honored and put it on my back.
Yeah. He was great today. Through five innings, did not allow a base runner, and through six innings, did not allow a hit. Or his first hit was allowed in the sixth inning. So really good stuff. 89 pitches, 60 strikes. That's the thing with him, right? If he's commanding the zone, if he's throwing strikes, his stuff is good enough, especially against the Baltimore Orioles, to dominate.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Like, we need to continue to see progression from him and to get deeper into games. And, you know, we started seeing that he was pulled at 89 pitches. So, you know, I think if this is a June start, then we're seeing him go probably a little deeper and maybe Boone lets him get out of that inning when he had two runners on. So I like it. I think he's one of them. I've said this 100 times, like he's one of my more fun guys to watch. He's just got all the different tools, and when he puts it together, he's going to be special. We were talking before we hit record, like if we're starting to see Domingo Germán step up and act like this guy, and you know, we're going to need another pitcher. Like, he's going to be playing a significant role in this season. That's an X factor. That's a difference maker right there. If you have a guy that's, you know, not in your rotation, or, you know, not supposed to be in your rotation, but now is slotted in at some point, that's a big deal.
Definitely. And he showed flashes last year. That's why you and I were very high on him with the strikeout stuff. I found two starts where he was, you know, extremely dominant last year. May 6th against the Indians. This was his first start of the season because he came in relief of Montgomery in Houston. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
And then he got the start on May 6th against Cleveland. Pitched a no-hitter through six innings, but they pulled him because of pitch count. Some people freaked out, but we all agreed with it. And then June 19th, he also pitched seven innings of one-run ball against Seattle. Like, so he has shown this before, but I want to see him start to build on the success because he's going to get the chances. And I think there will be more injuries. Like, that's just the reality of it. Tanaka usually spends a month on the disabled list. Like, these guys will have issues. Germán will need to play a big role.
Right. No. And that's the thing, like keep going, build that confidence, and just build on each start. The problem with him at some point is when you're seeing, you know, third time through the rotation, when you get to like the fifth, sixth inning, second, third time through, you're starting to see him as a more hittable pitcher, and he gets into trouble, and then sometimes it has spiraled out of control. So I think a lot of that was maturity and just, you know, getting into, you know, making sure that your mindset's in the right place for when those situations happen, to trust your stuff and to execute those pitches, because I think he would at points, you know, get mechanically thrown off at that point, whether it was, you know, just his head wasn't in the same spot and he was a little lackadaisical with the mechanics and leaving some pitches up. That's a problem for him. So if he can, you know, I think it's that next level is the mental side, because I think the physical talent and the pitches, like the actual executed pitches, are that good. So,
and today he got into trouble in the seventh inning. The Yankees are just crushing the Orioles at this point. Like, why push him in a blowout game?
No, you know? Right. And that's why they didn't. That's exactly why they didn't. So,
and they didn't think Tarpley struggled. Tarpley comes in and struggles, lets the two runners score plus another run. So I'm sure Boone was thinking, okay, maybe Tarpley, just let one of these runs score and give us two innings here. So, you know, just take one for the team, really. But he couldn't really allow him to do that.
Right. No, yeah, it's frustrating to see that, but it is what it is. Look, I mean, I'm super happy that Germán put another one, because, you know, when you see two consecutive, and I know the other thing is the first start, he walked, what, five guys? This one, he cut it down.
Five and five innings.
Yeah, cut down. So now he walked two and in six plus. So, you know, you're seeing progression on that as it's two starts. There's no sample size. But at the same time, you know, you want to see him build from one start to another.
And one guy that maybe fans were thinking might come around later this month, Gio Gonzalez, he had a really terrible first start in Scranton. Four innings, eight runs. He walked three batters, 45 strikes and 76 pitches. So bad start for the Gio Gonzalez Yankees era.
Yeah, I mean, look, something devastating has to happen for him to come up. That's the only way I think he's ever here. So
injury.
Yeah, That's the only way. Because
Sabathia's coming back soon. Sabathia should be back on the next homestand.
Yep.
And you got...
We might see him on Saturday.
We might. And so Sabathia's going to take a rotation turn. And who knows what they do. Maybe depending on off days, I haven't looked at it, but they might go six through the rotation the first time and just keep Loaisiga and Herman in the rotation for a little bit. Or just, you know, pick whoever's better at that point.
Yeah. No, I could see them doing that, you know, not getting CC all the way in, giving him an extra day. I could see them doing that six man.
Yeah. Coming up, Houston. So they're not missing Verlander or Cole. They're going Verlander, Cole, McHugh. Against Tanaka, Loaisiga, and Paxton, scheduled to pitch for the Yankees. So it's going to be a real test. Last season went well in Houston. They won 3 out of 4. Gary Sanchez ruined Ken Giles' life. That was a fun series. But
did he stay with the Blue Jays? Is he still with the Blue Jays? I think he broke tabs on Mr.
Ken.
Neither am I. But when I talked to Arden Zwelling, that Ken Giles was still there at that point. So I have to check rosters to see if he's still there.
The Yankees just cannot miss Verlander. It seems every time they play Houston, they get Verlander.
Yeah, I'm fine with that, man. I love facing him. Like I want them to face him.
Because he goes 7 or 8 innings against
him. I know, but I would rather them see him early and then just, you know, at least get some looks on him than you know, see him once in the playoffs. Or I'm fine with them seeing him. They need to see dominant pitching, you know, early in the season, in the middle of the season, late in the season. They need to see it because it's going to come if we want to win the whole thing.
Do you think I think they need to go, they're flying to Houston right now. I think they need to rally right now and say, this is a test for us. This is our first test of the year.
Yeah. I think that's what we're going to see. I mean, I definitely think the mentality's there. They feel good about themselves. They're going in hot. Feel like the pitching has been good. Pitching's been good all season, really. I mean, it's really, so far that's been the strength and the more consistent part of this team. So the offense really let them down in the homestand and then picked it back up in Baltimore, which is the perfect place to do it. Places a bandbox. They always crush in Camden Yards. So take that mentality and hit it over that bullshit left field in Houston.
Hopefully, if you played fantasy baseball today, that you had Gary Sanchez in your lineup, but maybe do not put a bunch of Yankees in your daily fantasy against Justin Verlander. But if you love fantasy baseball, then you need to try our new favorite app. It's called Draft. It's daily fantasy baseball, but not like the other guys. On Draft, you play live snake drafts with other people, just like in your season-long league. Everyone knows drafting is really the pinnacle, usually, of the fantasy season, is when you're picking guys. You get to do this every day. Drafts last for just one night, and once you're done drafting, that's it. There's no trades, no waiver wire. You just set it and forget it. The best part is play for cold hard cash and get paid out the next day. Drafts start from just $1, so there's a draft for everybody, Scott.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I know you did one, right? You recently did one and had too many Yankees at one point.
I got overzealous with the opening day. Everyone was going yard, and I was like, I got to get Judge in there. I got to get Luke Voit in there, and all backfired.
That's the thing. So, like, in all these fantasy sports, I usually don't pick my team because I don't want to be disappointed in them.
Right.
So it's the bad is overweighs the good for me. So join Draft today. Just search Draft in your app store or play right from your computer at draft.com. And for a limited time, the Bronx Pinstripe Show listeners get a free entry into a real money baseball draft when you make your first deposit. But you have to use the promo code Bronx. That's right. Play for real money just for free by using the promo code Bronx when you make your first deposit. Search Draft in the App Store or go to draft.com and enter promo code Bronx.
Let's get to mailbags. First up is from Jeffrey Muller at gmuller2112 on Twitter. Says the defensive struggles are a shame because in theory it should have gotten better with DJ LeMahieu at third, Torres at short, and Wade at second base. Is that the optimal defensive infield right now? And is our only question mark the Bird and Voit platoon at first base?
I mean, if you're talking about those three guys, I mean, those three guys are not the issue defensively. LeMahieu has been phenomenal all year. Torres has been pretty good at short. And Tyler Wade, I talked about him earlier. I mean, he's been, I think he's one of the best gloves in the organization. So we're not talking about those three. We're talking about defensive issues.
Right, and I think that is, to answer his question just quick off the bat, yes, that is the optimal defensive infield with the players they have on the roster right now.
Yeah, and I think you could could flip-flop Torres and Wade at short and second and be just fine as well.
Yes.
Ultimately, yeah, I'd honestly, I would prefer that, to tell you the truth.
Just to keep Torres consistent at second?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be my thing. Because I think Tyler Wade, also a natural shortstop, can play that you know, just as well, if not better than Torres, probably better.
So Voit and Bird at first base, they actually had a couple nice plays over the weekend, but there's still some big question marks there. Voit in his career has only played 500 innings at first base, which is limited time when you start to look at advanced defensive metrics, but he has minus five defensive runs saved in those 500 innings. Bird, on the other hand, has played 1400 plus innings at first base, a lot bigger sample, and he has minus six defensive runs saved. So as you can see there, Bird is, the advanced metrics say, a better first baseman than Luke Voit, you know, samples being the caveat.
Right. But not by a whole lot. And you're looking at still guys.
Because you still see the boneheaded plays like we saw on Saturday night with Bird bobbling that ground ball with a runner on third base going home. And then once you bobble it, you got to have the presence of mind to just pick up the ball, tag the runner out, or step on base. Do not try and get the guy out at home, because once you bobbled it, that was it.
As soon as you bobble the ball, unless you have a force play, that's exactly right. You're done. That's it. These guys are going on contact. So he was it was bang, bang, even with a clean pick and a good throw. Still going to be a close play. So yeah, as soon as you bobble it, it's 101, man. You gobble that ball up and you take the out, you get the sure out, and you move on. So you're trying to avoid that big inning. And he just didn't do that. So yeah, that's an issue with him. Voit had some picks today that were nice, cleaned up some you know, iffy throws that were coming to him. So you know, if we're looking at these two guys, look, I still think that when you see what Voit's doing, he's still mashing the ball out. He's the guy that they prefer. But both are going to play for a while. They're both going to be up here for, you know, the foreseeable future.
The Yankees have five unearned runs so far. I saw somebody tweet out, I can't remember who it was, but the Rays have no unearned runs so far this year. And I think that's such a Tampa Rays thing, right? It's just don't beat yourself. And the beating yourself is what is really pissed us off early in the season so far for the Yankees.
Well, yeah, and that's frustrating, because that is the mark of a good team, though, to tell you the truth, is the fact that you can play short defense and not make errors that cost yourselves games that are supposed to be made. I mean, that's the fundamentals is where the problems come into play. And yeah, when you're sloppy like the Yankees have been, on the defensive side, that's frustrating. So
and
when
the
you
base
have a
running
team,
side, base running base side,
running side as well. Yeah. You're right. But when you have a team that is young guys, you don't have really any big names, like, you better play fundamental baseball, and you better play it well, and you better play clean, because you're not as talented as the rest of the league. So you better tighten up the ship and make sure that I've talked about a ship like three times today, but you better make sure that you're not making those dumb details.
Because there's the market for a boat.
There's no margin for error. There's just, you know, and I think when you're one of those teams like the Tampa Bay Rays, you just got to make sure that you're taking care of the things that you can control.
Mm-hmm. All right, next up is Aaron O'Brien. Why would Aaron Boone start Holder in the seventh inning? She's talking about Saturday night, when he was okay with bringing in Otto right after. And why is I'm so triggered I can't even type, hitting right before the worst batters when he is only the only one actually getting on base? If you were Aaron Boone, how would you set the lineup given the current circumstances? So Aaron is pissed off about Aaron Boone's decision to bring in Holder for not a third inning of work, but in a third inning on Saturday, and also where LeMahieu is hitting in the batting order.
Right. So Holder coming back out again, that's when I first read this,
everyone questioned it.
I thought she meant the fifth inning, and when he came in, I had no problem with that. Like, I think there's a lot of trust in Holder. I know Holder gave up a run. It was a runner that was on base, but he got out of a jam, let up one run, and
pitched the sixth
and pitched well,
and then comes and pitched well.
I don't know why
comes out for the seventh.
Yeah, that's to me is crazy. But there needs to be a clean inning for Ottavino at that point, no doubt about it. So I don't know what that's kind of like. It's similar mentality of, let's just get to through the bottom of the lineup, and we'll have the guy start clean at the top.
If you have a bullpen, if you have the Red Sox bullpen, right, and you're just, whoever's pitching well, you're going to let them go out there because you got nothing else in that bullpen. I understand it. But when you have the Yankees bullpen, there's no excuse for doing that.
It's overthinking matchups, overthinking the analytics and placing it and not understanding what's happening on the game. And this is what drives me nuts. I don't know what's happening here. Is he being mandated because the numbers say certain things to do that? Or is he actually looking at these numbers and saying, that's a good idea. I see with my own eyes what's happening, and I still think that's a good idea. That the problem with this whole thing, with this, with the book coming out and talking about the freaking nerds in the tunnel, is I don't know what's happening behind the scenes, and it's pissing me off. It puts me on edge.
Because right, because you want to yell at Boone, but you're like, do I really yell at Boone? Or
I'm still yelling
at
Boone. I'm yelling at Boone no matter what. But if he's allowing that to happen as a manager, as a professional, like, that's your job. If he's allowing that to happen, I think differently of him in that spot, because there's no possible way anybody who has their name on all these decisions, because it's their name, that you're not going to be making those decisions. So yeah. If that's the case, that he's looking at the analytics and then also making decisions based on that, then he doesn't understand how to use these analytics with the real life baseball. And that's a problem.
And there's no precedent for Holder doing that kind of appearance.
Yeah. So, you know, this is something that we have to monitor as the season goes on and see. We have to just take these individual circumstances and really just see if we can't find any trend, I think, and like try to find out what's going on. Hopefully the beat writers are asking good questions to get his mentality there. But yeah, it drives me nuts.
She also asked about the lineup. I'm not even going to worry about lefty-righty at this point with the lineup. I'm taking whoever's the best hitters that day you're going to play and order them one through nine.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I like LeMahieu up at the top, but it just makes a lot of sense. They're not moving Judge out of that two spot. That's very apparent. So the LeMahieu would have to lead off, and Gardner is, you know, apparently the cemented player in the leadoff spot, unless Aaron.
But he's not hitting well right now, and no. LeMahieu is. So I don't care about lefty righty. Put LeMahieu first.
Well, it doesn't
Judge matter.
The lefty righty thing doesn't
righties,
matter.
Who cares?
The lefty righty thing doesn't matter when there's one lefty.
Who would you rather? Right. Who would you rather getting five at bats, five plate appearances in a game potentially? LeMahieu or Brett Gardner? Like, it's not even a question right now.
Yeah. No, DJ LeMahieu is a breath of fresh air. He's a beaut.
Next question is from Jared. How many injuries have to happen before we start questioning the Yankees training staff? I'm not going to get into too much questioning staff because, frankly, we don't know well enough about the trainers, the strength and conditioning, what's going on behind the scenes with these guys' bodies to really know. But do you think it's a fair question to bring up, like the Yankees training staff, as far as maybe they need to try something different?
No, I mean, look, internally, there should be an internal review on why these injuries are happening on an individual basis. That's certainly the thing. But when you're coming back from an offseason and you're getting into your spring training and then you're getting into the season, these guys are all working out with their own guys in the offseason. They're working out doing their own thing. And you know, I'm sure that the Yankees are in touch and you know, in communication, seeing what they're doing and things like that. But they're not working out with the Yankees training staff all the offseason. We're 2 weeks into the season.
Some guys, you know, some guys were at the facility a lot.
Okay, so Greg Bird was there. He's healthy. Who else was there? The guys that are still playing are.
And Duhar was there.
All right. Well, and Duhar was also in the Dominican for a while as well. But you see, he may have gotten there a little early. But the point is that these guys are all doing different things in the offseason when they come in. The training staff, a lot of times, is there for maintaining. And I'm sure they all, like, maybe their trainers will talk with the guys that are working them out in the offseason and come up with a plan that everybody feels good about. But they're not watching them all the time. So I have a hard time believing that. And Duhar diving back into third has nothing to do with a trainer. He jammed his shoulder, literally, by diving too close to a bag, and the momentum jammed his shoulder. So, and that tore his labrum. So who are we blaming at that point?
Blame the labrum.
I blame the player.
Well, it's a question I think a lot of
people... There's no blame. It's a freak injury.
It's a blame that a lot of people are bringing up, though. They want to attack the strength and conditioning coaches on the Yankees team because they see guys dropping like flies. Like, it was an alarming rate of injuries the last week.
And the fact that, you know, Aaron Hicks has had similar injuries throughout his entire career. Like, that's just what he is. And, you know, they can only do so much to you can't fix the human body and change it to a point where, you know, you're making his soft tissue not as injury prone, I guess. You can do that by working out, but the guy's in pretty good shape. So I don't know. I'm not buying it.
Let's move on to the next one from Ben. You guys were talking about fans who say, quote, it's only April, so don't worry. Well, this article might be helpful. He sent us an article to something Mike Petriello wrote on MLB.com titled How the Playoff Picture Has Already Changed. And then Ben goes on to say, the Yankees' bad start only affected their playoff odds a couple percentage points, but Boston's bad start impacted their odds a lot, minus 16 points from 90% to 74%. And this article was written on Friday.
Okay, here's what I say to this. You and I talked about this beforehand. I don't give a rat's ass what the percentages are. What is the difference between having a bad start and saying it's early, they'll fix it, and then you're throwing a percentage on it? Oh, oh my God, now there's a 76%. It went from 90 to 74%. So that was a 16-point difference, and I see that number now, and now I believe that they're screwed. Whereas I know that they if I didn't know that number, I would be like, oh, they'd figure out it's early. What's the difference? You're just putting You're putting a number to what the struggle is. These numbers can't predict the future.
No,
no idea how they're going to play. It doesn't make any sense to me. Let's just attach numbers to everything and then live and die by them. I'm over it.
Yeah, you're over it. Over the numbers.
It's stupid.
Old man Reinen, get off my lawn.
This shit is dumb. Like the percentage for the playoffs at this point. Come on.
Well, Fangraphs does a rolling playoff odds every day. Day they're updated.
That's great.
I'll look at them in September. But I think the reason I think Ben sent us this email is not to say, oh, hey, look, a bad start impacted the Red Sox.
I know. I'm not talking to Ben. I'm talking to the numbers people. I'm talking to the nerds.
Well, I just think that, you know, the casual fan response is to say it's early. It does these games, you know, whatever. It's a long season. But the reality is, these games count just as much as September 10th games.
Sure.
That's why it's like, it's stupid for when people say, well, why are you upset? It's only April 3rd. Well, I'm upset because this game impacts the playoff odds just as much as September 10th.
But I'm not worried about the playoff odds. I'm worried about the way the team is playing and how they're doing it.
Like, sure.
You're throwing a number on it doesn't change the way I feel.
Okay.
That's my point.
Yeah. No, I get it.
Like the fact that there's a 16-point difference doesn't, I don't need to know that to know that this team is playing like shit, but is better than that. Or like if you're saying it's now they're 74 now. So now I'm supposed to be worried because it's down 16 points. No, it doesn't make sense to me. Like that number means absolutely nothing. It's smoke. It's
right.
Bullshit.
And intuitively, anyone with a brain would still say the Red Sox have like a 95% chance to make the playoffs.
Right. Like that's not who they are. So why are we attaching a number to a team that's, it's just too early. Like there's not enough of a data set for you to get a real number. Like data has a place in this world. I understand that numbers have a place in this world. And I think they have a very stronghold place in baseball at this point. I just think sometimes in the way that they're used, they're not used in the right way or potentially used too much and too much weight is used. Too much weight is on the numbers, but like something like a playoff odds, talking about playoff odds on April 7th is one of the dumbest things I've ever seen.
Well, here, this goes in nicely with the final question from Steffi at Yankee Steffi on Twitter. We got off to a rough start, but if I recall back in 2009, the Yankees got off to a bad start and ended up winning the World Series. She is correct. 2009, the Yankees started out 15-17. They were 15-17 on May 12th. They went on a 9-game winning streak from there. They won over 100 games and they won the World Series. So if you think like, you know, the 2-and-whatever start that the Yankees had, well, 15-17. If the Yankees are 15-17 on May 12th, I think people would be freaking out.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Like when you get further into the season and you're still seeing the same issues, that's when you have the problems. I'm pretty sure the 98 Yankees also had a horrible start to the season, and then they became the best team in baseball ever.
Are you saying that sarcastically?
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you.
Because it doesn't matter.
I was about to freak out. All right. Anything else you want to talk about? Any more numbers maybe you want to bring up?
No more numbers. I'm good with the numbers here.
How about the voicemail number? What's that?
That's a number that we should all care about and put on your phone. 646-480-0342. I know we got a lot of them after, I forget what game it was. At some point something bad happened. And
it was the Wednesday game, the Wednesday afternoon game when they left the 18 strikeouts.
Yeah, that was it. You're right. So yeah, I'm pretty sure we had like 16 voicemails that day. It was just nonstop.
Right. Yeah. Usually the voicemail line lights up when something bad happens.
Yeah.
And if you guys ever are wondering what the number is, if you have, you know, an itching to call, it's in our Twitter bio now. We updated that. So go to the @YankeesPodcast Twitter bio, and the voicemail line is right there. But like Scott said, you could just put it in your phone and light it up anytime you want to rant about the Yankees, whatever that hot take may be. We've got voicemails coming up on the show. Submit mailbag questions for next Monday's show at Yankees. At where are we sending people for that?
Wherever
BronxPinstripes.com/podcast. Email us, DM us, whatever, to get the question in.
But send them on the website if you can't. That way we have one place to look.
Right. Any last words, Scott?
Yeah, they just got to continue this, right? We got to see.
Against Houston.
It was
play
nice
well against
to see.
Houston. You're going
nice
up against good pitching, so
we're all in better moods now.
Yeah.
Let's continue that, please.
All right. We'll talk to you Thursday.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
I must be out or I pick up the phone.
Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
17 strikeouts going into the bottom of the ninth. I fucking hate this team so much right now.
What's the point of a hitting coach if you can't fucking hit and all you do is strike out? You can't get hit with runners in scoring position. What is Marcus Thames' purpose? Because clearly he's really not doing shit.
What can I say other than supremely disgusted? This team is looking like the Orioles and the Tigers. I mean, are we going to be the ones losing 100 games this season? I bet you could take the disabled list and the injured list and put those players on the fucking field, they'd be the ones that would be scoring the runs. I bet those people would be winning games more than this team that's healthiest.
I'm calling after watching this atrocity of a baseball game. This team, it's a joke right now. Aaron Boone is a joke. How do you go yesterday? You don't pinch hit Sanchez. You don't pinch hit Bird. You don't pinch hit Tulo. You start Mike Talkman batting six. You don't start Bird against the righty Zimmerman on Tuesday, but Wednesday you're going to start him against the lefty Boyd? Show me the analytics on that one. I also think it's hilarious that the day after Tulo gets arrested, boom, he gets hurt. Absolutely unreal. And, you know, can't forget Tuesday also. Got Sanchez homers two times in a row, two games, and then he gets a rest day. This guy is a joke. Fire Boone, fire Timms, fire the analytics team. What a joke.
Hey guys, yeah, it's Zeke here. If I see another Yankee batter pull his ass out on a swing and try to crank the ball down the left field line, I'm gonna lose my fucking shit. We have one of the most stacked lineups in the entire league. We should be putting numbers up every inning against every pitcher we face. We have not faced one guy that should have dominated us. And we look like we're little leaguers out there against fucking, I don't even know, like, it's crazy. It's a joke. Yes, it's early in the season, but come on. We gotta get some sort of momentum switch soon. Go fucking Yankees.
Okay, so don't get me wrong here, because I know this offense is playing absolutely piss poor, but you can't go without noting some of the decisions Aaron Boone's already made early in this season. Let's start with game two against the Tigers. That lineup was terrible. That 6-9 was gross to look at. You're telling me that Clint Frazier couldn't have played left field over Mike Talkman, and you couldn't have had Gary Sanchez or Greg Bird DH that day? In game three against the Tigers, shoving Brett Gardner in with two outs. You either do it right from the beginning, or what he should have done was waited for Mike Talkman's at-bat to come around in the order and Gardner pinch hit for him. Now, I know Talkman didn't get his at-bat. That's because Gardner was thrown out at second. I don't know. I know it's not exactly all on Boone, obviously. I mean, 17, 18 strikeouts, whatever it was today. But I mean, come on, he is doing this team no favors, and I'd just love to, you know, hear what you guys have to say about that.
Hey, everyone. Just a reminder that the New York Yankees are not good at playing baseball in 2019. They are sucking all of the ass. But hey, at least we don't have to look at Sonny Gray, am I right?
All I can say is, wow. Wow. We already lost two in a row to the Tigers. Wow. Keith McPherson is at 20 out of 100. JJ's at 0. And I know I'm not supposed to freak out because it's only a few games into the season, but I have a right to bitch and complain. Like, how are we playing so poorly at that? Like, we need to seriously look at this next man up mentality. We need to fucking go. Let's go, Yankees.
18 strikeouts? What the hell is going on? No wonder it's so windy in the city today. If George Steinbrenner was still around, he would be in that clubhouse right now, ripping people a new one. Aaron Boone is lucky he's not around, because he'd be on warning right now. We gotta wake up, man.
Leave a message. I spent $10,000 on season tickets to watch this shit. It's an embarrassing. It's a disgrace. Somebody needs to hang for this disaster. It's an embarrassment. Okay, either bring back Girardi, get rid of Boone, get rid of Cashman. It's a fucking disaster.
Hey, Pittsburgh, this is Eric from Syracuse. Gotta say, I love seeing the red fucking rocket Todd Frazier hit the go-ahead home run in the eighth inning to guarantee a series win against Baltimore. Everything's in the way up, baby. Woo!
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.